WordSunday.com. The 32nd Sunday in Ordinary Time, Cycle C. I just don't get it. Brent sighed. Papers laid haphazard over the kitchen table. There were receipts and bills and notices from the bank. A legal pad sat in front of him with a set of figures scribbled in the margins. To the side of the legal pad, a sheet of paper announced its use. Deduction worksheet for Schedule A. There was a broken pencil on top of the form. Brent closed his eyes and then pounded his forehead against the palm of his fist. Income taxes, he breathed out. I just don't get it. Have you ever been frustrated with a task or a concept you just didn't understand? More to the point, have you ever been frustrated by a Bible passage that just didn't seem to make sense? Of all the passages I can think of, one of the most puzzling is the controversy between Jesus and the Sadducees over the resurrection. For the longest time, I would read the passage, but I wouldn't comprehend it. I just didn't get it. If you feel the same way, I understand. In the next few moments, I hope to make this controversy a little less opaque. The controversy between Jesus and the Sadducees was a rabbinical-style debate. Each side rooted its defense in an appeal to God's law, the Torah. For their part, the Sadducees limited their scriptures to the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, so they rejected any belief that lay explicitly outside the law, especially the notion of the resurrection. The Sadducees initiated the debate with a story about a woman who was widowed seven times to a family of brothers. Each succeeding brother in the story fulfilled God's law by marrying his childless sister-in-law, so she could bear a son in memory of the dead brothers. After they all died and rose again, whose wife would she be? Of course, the rhetorical question had no answer. It was an absurd situation. And that was the point of the Sadducees. God would never create a situation in which his will for the faithful would violate his law. Since the law was eternal, its precepts about marriage stood forever. So the notion of the resurrection did not. There was no resurrection. Jesus responded to the logic of the Sadducees in two ways. First, he undercut their argument about the status of the married in the kingdom. In fact, Jesus maintained no one is married in the afterlife. Gender distinctions, and hence their function, had no place there. The saved would be like angels. So much for the absurd situation the Sadducees proposed. Jesus then proposed the second line of argument that even trumped the passages from Deuteronomy about childless widows. He appealed to the initial revelation of God that sparked the formation of the Israeli nation. Yahweh showed himself to Moses in the burning bush as the living God. This was a deity whose essence could not be captured in images of stone or wood. He transcended any attempt of humanity to contain and so control him. Yahweh lived and acted in the lives of his people. This is the key to the argument of Jesus, so let me repeat it. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob revealed himself as the living God, the one who lives, and was active in the affairs of his people. If this God allowed people to die and so ceased to be, he couldn't be active in their affairs after death. So to be the living God, people must live even after death so he can be active in their lives. The notion of God to be truly the living God requires people to live forever. The notion of God requires the reality of the resurrection. All right, take a moment and let the point of Jesus to sink in. The idea of the resurrection predated the life of Jesus by more than two centuries. The narrative of the widow and her seven martyrs' sons from 2 Maccabees was ample proof that common Jews held on to the hope of the resurrection even under the oppression of foreign despots. In the afterlife, God and his justice would prevail. That gave hope to many generations of the faithful down to the time of Jesus. The argument of Jesus imbued that hope with greater weight. He seemed to say, Belief in the resurrection is more than just a grasp for divine justice. It's inseparable from our belief in God. One belief reinforces the other. Our trust in God is a trust that He will take care of us forever. And He will. In 2 Thessalonians, St. Paul tells us God loves us and gives us hope with His active presence in our lives. Paul called this eternal encouragement, a hope without end. In our materialistic world, we sometimes find it hard to grasp the reality of the resurrection, much less the argument of Jesus for the resurrection in Luke's gospel. We're tempted to think that what we see and touch and experience is all there is. Beyond life, there's only darkness. Death is an end. But if we believe in the living God, the God that's active in our lives, we should hold firm to the belief in the resurrection. God lives, and we will live with Him, even beyond the grave. How does your trust in God help you to prepare for the afterlife? This presentation was written, narrated, and produced by Larry Broding. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Thank you for listening.